Okay, so welcome to another morning, another talk. Try to keep it on meditation. And already yesterday I was talking about coming into the present moment. Now's the most important time in caring. This also, it ties in with another simile of meditation, which allows us to look at the meditation even in a deeper way. And that was a simile of the thousand petal lotus. And the simile of the thousand petal lotus recognizes that a lotus is an age-old symbol of Buddhism. You've got a lotus there in the front there. Lotus is on the side. And you may even see in many Buddhist temples, the lotus is one of the great symbols of Buddhism. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Let's do three reasons for it. One reason is the classic one of a lotus growing in the mud and the lotus pushing itself up through the mud, through the water, and then into the sunshine above the lake. And that was just showing that everybody, no matter where you come from, no matter who you are, you know, born in any situation, in the mud, in the dirt, you can still rise. And as you go further up, the water becomes cooler, lighter, less polluted. When you get to the top, it's nice and free. So it's an encouraging symbol of the fact that everybody can do this. Number two is one of the symbols which I developed. And that was the symbol that, you know, that sometimes in life, you know, people say really rotten things about you. They criticize you. They call you all terrible names, unfairly so. And other times, people praise you and think, oh, you're the best monk in the whole world. You are so kind and wise and giving. Now, the simile of the lotus deals with both those experiences. Because a lotus flower, no matter what falls on it, it all runs off, leaving no residue. So, if a person urinates on a lotus, if you pee on that lotus, all that dirty urine, it just goes onto the lotus and falls off, leaving no residue. After the deed is done, the lotus smells like a lotus. It doesn't smell like urine. Because the lotus keeps nothing. It all falls off. And if someone comes and they pour Chanel No. 5 on the lotus. Now, I don't know if that is the most modern perfume, but I've still seen it around in the airports, even as a monk. You know, you have to go through these airports today. You have to go through all the shops. It's like a shopping center. And so it has happened to me. Sometimes they don't know who I am and I'm a monk. They say, oh, sir, would you like to try some of this perfume for your girlfriend? So now I've got a girlfriend. We don't use perfume, okay? Leave me alone. Free sample of whiskey, sir. Would you like to try this wine from Margaret River? No. But anyway, if you, apparently they still use Chanel No. 5. Remember my girlfriend when I was young, they used to use that stuff. But anyway, if you pour Chanel No. 5 over a lotus flower, that too just all falls off, leaving no scent of the perfume. And afterwards, the lotus still has the scent of a lotus and nothing else. Because the lotus flowers, they don't keep anything. It all falls off. And to me, that was a wonderful simile. In life, someone will just metaphorically urinate all over you. And other times, they'll give you so many accolades, like pouring perfume over you. And both times, you remember, I'm like a lotus. So nothing sticks. It all falls off. Praise and blame. I've been many times blamed for things I didn't do. And many times I was praised for things which I didn't do also. I think it's fair sometimes. But what happens is none of them you keep. Everything just falls off. That was the second simile of the lotus. But the best simile of the lotus, this is a deep one, a 1,000-petal lotus. A lotus closes up at night time. When the first rays of the sun sort of hit the lotus after sunrise, then the lotus starts to open. But if you see that lotus when it's closed, you look at the outermost petals of that lotus. They're rough. They've got hardly any color. They're like gray. And they're like serrated, like, you know, corrugated iron. It's not iron, obviously. It's very thick. Because that outermost sheath of the lotus has to protect it from the wind and the dust and everything else. It's a protective covering. But when the heat and the light hit the outermost petal of the lotus begins to open up. And inside that outermost sheath, you see something which has got some color, actually looks like a petal. But it's still quite thick, and it's not that fragrant or beautiful yet. But now that first inside petal is exposed to the warmth and light of the sun, now that can open up. And inside that layer of petals is another layer of petals, which are more beautiful, more fragrant, allowing that second layer of petals to take the warmth and light of the sun so that too can open up. And the lotus opens up layer by layer. The one layer which is closed now is receiving the warmth and light of the sun, and that can open up to see what is right inside. And the deeper you go into the lotus, the more fragrant, the more beautiful, the more refined those petals are. That's the simile of the 1,000-petal lotus. And that is referring to your body and mind. When you first come to this retreat center, you're like this closed lotus, all rough, and corrugated and serrated and dirty and no color in it, no real depth, because it's closed up. But in every one of you little lotuses, there's this beautiful flower inside. Just need to know how to open it up. And one of the stories I tell, here about 3 years ago, a gentleman came to one of my retreats, and he was covered in tattoos. He was a really big guy, really rough. And when I saw this big, rough guy in tattoos all over him, I did what we call, like, stereotyping. I made big mistake, because just up the road here, only 6 kilometers up the road, is a prison farm. And when he came, and I saw him and said, oh, excuse me, sir, you got the wrong place. This is a retreat center. The prison is off the road. And he said, no, I'm booked in. And I looked at his name. Oh, yeah, you are. I'm sorry about that. But what was amazing, you know, I make mistakes in a stupid Ajahn Brahm, but when he came for an interview once, he started talking about his meditations. And I was just, wow. And he was, you know, honest about it, and he had got a jhana, a real one, not these fake ones they teach in the United States. No, they are fake ones over there, but this is a real proper jhana, blissing out, body disappearing, can't feel anything, can't hear anything, having a wonderful time. And, whew, that really surprised me. The last person I ever thought in that retreat would get a jhana, it was him. So if any of you haven't got jhanas yet, get some tattoos. Rock yourself up a bit. That's only joking. But what was happening there, that it just proved again and again, it doesn't matter where you're starting from. Because you just need to open up your lotus to get inside. So, lotus is you. And even some people, they think, oh, I'm just really all crazy, I'm just having so many problems, I'm depressed, I'm psychotic, I'm ODD, I'm, I don't know, sometimes all these labels, I forget which ones is which. Sometimes I get them wrong. Instead of ODD, I get OCD. Actually, that is one, isn't it? And sometimes ECC, but apparently that's the European Economic Community or something like that, or NATO, but that's not a condition, that's I think NATO. Anyway, there's so many acronyms now, you forget which one's which. But anyway, it doesn't matter where you start from. Because you go inside and you go far deeper than any person you think you are. Angulimala, serial killer. Jhanas, enlightened. Patachara, totally out of her mind, crazy with grief. Lost her husband, her two children and her parents on the same day, tragically. She became Arahat, fully enlightened. Kisa Gotami, there's so many people who were just hopeless cases, became totally, fully enlightened. So, you're a lotus. Don't look at the damage you've got on the outside. Because inside is something amazing, beautiful, wonderful, inspiring. So, how do you open it? The warmth and light of the sun. What does that mean? Warmth. Kindness. It's one of the reasons why people's meditation doesn't go as deep as it should. They don't have kindness. Too much force. Listen here, Teddy. You better meditate or else, okay? This is your last warning. That doesn't get you anywhere. So you're kind there. Teddy bear, there, Ajahn Brahm, there, meditate. That works. That's the kindness, the warmth, which is important to open up the lotus. And the other one, the light, that is the mindfulness, the awareness. You know, you're seeing what's going on there. It's lit up. And you're kind. Those two, mindfulness and kindness, what I call kindfulness, those are the two which open up lotuses. So you're sitting there with your old body, tired, sick, just really aching, dying, falling apart, decrepitude came a long time ago, and you're sitting there, but you're just mindful of it, and you're kind to it. And just as I said yesterday or the day before, when you're aware of your body, you can feel it, ache here, something there, and you're kind to it, and you find it relaxes. It relaxes so much that the tightness, the tension, the pain vanish. Sometimes only vanish for a small, short time and then they're back after the meditation. But sometimes those aches and pains, they vanish for good. Fevers, cancers, tumors, all this amazing stuff happens. It's a retreat over in Singapore, in Bangkok, for the Buddhist fellowship over there. Because there was two people there, and I tell these stories, and they confirmed them. One of them was that fellow who had the tumor in his sinus, couldn't breathe quietly, throughout the whole retreat, and people said, can you please ask meditators to breathe quietly in the hall? And the poor fellow couldn't do anything. He had a big tumor up his nose. And the last day of the retreat, that was when he came to me. It's always the last day. Because then you give up. You stop trying. It's not working. Ugh. So when you give up, then you let go. And so he let go the last. And he came running towards me afterwards. Ajahn Brahm, I heard a sound, pop. A pop went up on his nose and he could breathe. The first time his doctors had given up on him. And he could, but only for 1 minute, then it closed up again. But, that was an encouragement. Something weird was happening. And there was one of the ladies over at the retreat over in Bangkok. She said, I was there at that retreat. I remember that fellow. And I went back to Perth. And 6 months later, visiting Sydney, another place, this fellow came up to me and said, "Do you remember me?" "Don't do that to me, please." I see so many people. As sometimes, even Ajahn Vamali comes back from overseas and says, "Who are you?" But, this may not, of course, I know a lot of you, but some of these, I only see it once, you do remember this, of course I do. I'm honest, okay? So, you know, I don't like upsetting you, but I've got to be honest. So I said, "No, who the hell are you?" And he said, "I was that guy." And his tumour totally went, carried on the meditation, saying thank you to me. And also afterwards saying that he's spending the rest of his life, whatever years he's got left, teaching meditation to people. That's really cute and very cool. You know, he saved somebody's life. And instead of not giving donations or anything back, but giving his life to help others. That's really, really wonderful. But there's a this other fellow in that, he was actually this guy's brother. He was from Penang. This was a fellow, he had some really weird disease where his brain gets scrambled up. Only about 5 or 6 people in the whole world had it. And they had this really painful operation. Basically, brain surgery to reassemble his brain, whatever. And then they did that. It was very painful, but, you know, he was young, had a family, it was worthwhile doing. But then, you know, he went for a checkup and they said, "It's back again." You know, it's very rare that it comes back again, but you've got it back again. And, oh, my goodness, do I have to go through all that pain, you know, in those hospitals again? But then, in the meantime, his wife was pregnant with her second kid. No, for the kid, I'll go through it. If he was single, he would just probably let himself die. Go through it for the second kid. And then, so, he went over there, did all the pre-op stuff. And doctors always like to do another test. And they gave him a test just before the operation. Already had everything all ready. And then he told me, he said, the doctors came and said, "Just wait on for 15 minutes, we're having a consultation." He didn't know what was going on. And when they came back 15 minutes, they said, "No operation necessary. It's just reassembled itself properly. I don't know what the heck you've been doing. But there's no need for operation anymore." Previous scan showed it was all messed up. This one, it was good again. And he came up to me in Penang, this was last December, and said, "I was doing your meditation. Thank you. It worked." And his brother was there. This guy's brother was at the Bangkok retreat. So this actually works. Amazing what happens. You know, when you start to sort of let go. And this is what happens. You're kind to your body, aware of it, relax it, and it just disappears. Your body, with all its pain and all its damage and all its wounds, you're kind to it and you go inside. So the body is not a problem. You're sitting here and you're watching inside. And what's the next layer of petals? And I, you know, there's many different ways you can look at this, but sometimes I call the peace-o-meter. Because if you're really concerned about the body aching here, itching there, of course you can't really be that aware of how peaceful or agitated you are, because this takes precedence, the body. So once the body is settled, you go inside, kindness and awareness. You're aware, how peaceful are you? Come on, be peaceful. You're not peaceful enough. Does that make you peaceful? If I say, no fear, Ajahn Brahm is here. Nothing to worry about. If you don't get enlightened this morning, there's always lunch to look forward to. A little bit of kindness tends you do relax. And when you start to relax, then you can go deeper into the lotus. The relaxation, the kindness, a lot of times it's doing two things, two layers of petals. You would say levels of meditation, but instead of stages, like steps, you've got to go up. On this step, you've got to go up to the next step, move on, up, on. It's not going on to the next stage, it's going in to the next stage. The lotus, you go in, the next stage is right where you are now. Just go deeper into it. So, you are just, when you're watching that peaceometer, there's two things which which often happen. Present moment awareness. You know, the peace is now. Just like feelings in the body, they only exist now. They don't really leave much memory. So you're cold now, but you rug up and you feel warm again. The cold doesn't really leave much of an echo or a memory. Say when you're doing walking meditation, you can feel the sensation on your feet right now. But the sensation a few moments ago is gone forever. It's one of the reasons why physical feelings or just, peaceometers, that gets you into the present moment. Plans, traumas, worries, all that sort of stuff, that's always just locks you into the past or the future. And that's no real place to be in meditation. That's the world. We're trying to leave the world, get a bit of peace and quiet. Be here. So, right here, just with your peaceometer, you tend to let go of the past and the future. You're just here. Yeah, you got problems afterwards, but now is the time your future is being made. You learn much more from the present moment than you'll ever learn from the past. The present is important. When you're in the peaceometer, you find as you relax, 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 as you get more and more peaceful, you naturally become present. And the next thing which happens at that time is also this inner commentary. All that inner voice. And that just drives you crazy. No one ever gets wise through thinking. They just get headaches. Wisdom comes from silence. From seeing. Not from giving things names. I will now give you an example. Here you go. Oh, let's do this one. This is what I did in the... was it 6th or 7th? The 7th World Computer Congress in Daejeon, South Korea, where I gave the keynote address at the World Computer Congress in the high-tech city of South Korea. What is Ajahn Brahm doing there? Amazed all these high-tech entrepreneurs from Google and Facebook and LinkedIn and all these people. What's a Buddhist monk doing there? And that's what he asked me, what are you doing here giving a keynote address? You know, what's your part of IT? And I started off by holding up a plastic bottle. And I said, what is this? And I'm going to ask this of you. What am I holding up? Yeah, what else? Come and describe it. Give me more information. Yeah, what else? What do you see? Yeah, more, come on. What else do you see? Describe it to me. Color. Size. What is it? Yeah, what shape? Yeah, bottle, but what type of bottle? Give me more info. What else? Now, I'm not going to go off for too long here. But have you noticed that when I first hold this up, what is this? Plastic bottle. You think you got the answer, so you can tick it off and go on to something else. Because I kept pressing you for more information, it means you started looking deeper, seeing more. The more you see, the more you start to find uses for this bottle you may have never experienced before, such as... That didn't work, did it? You can use it for a gong bonger. You can use it if there's a wind to hold things down. You can use it if you're making chapatis. There's so many things you can use this for. If you're in a hospital, you can use it as a drip. And if your doctor, your supervisor complains, you can use it for anaesthetic. I don't know if you heard about, there was this poor hospital somewhere in the world, and a fellow woke up from anaesthetic, and he was complaining about a headache. And he asked the nurse, can you give me some aspirin or Panadol, anything? Because I've got a big spinning headache. And the nurse said, look, we never touched your head. It was just keyhole surgery in your gut. You had a gut operation. But my head hurts. But we never touched it. It's impossible. He said, look, come over here. And he felt it was actually swollen and red. So the nurse had never seen this before. So she rang up the surgeon and said, look, there must be some complications over here. I know it was only like keyhole surgery, you know, in the guts, but the patient's complaining about a big pain in his head, and it's actually swollen. And the doctor said, oh, yeah, that's to be expected, because during the operation we ran out of anaesthetic, so we used the hammer. Well, they... Medical costs are going up and up and up. They have to cut costs somewhere. Cheap anaesthetic. It's only a joke. It doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen, does it, Dr. Moody? But anyway, so what did I get there? Going there for? But anyway, just what is happening there is when you get in the present moment, you find you don't need any commentary anymore. So all the commentary, what is this? Those are all words. When the words stopped, when you couldn't describe this anymore with your ideas, which are all old knowledge, what someone else has taught you. Now you look at this and maybe you can actually see it. See something new. See another way of looking at this. Not what you were taught at school, not what you saw on Discovery Channel or whatever, but actually seeing this in a totally different way, when all your old thoughts, your inner commentary stops. Wisdom born of silence. That was called innovation. And they really loved that at the computer conference, because it's so important to get innovation, to actually to get ahead, to get research, to see things in a different way. And I'll show them how it works. From a Buddhist monk. They really thought that was cool. And they actually, what is it? They gave a donation afterwards. $2,000 to Bodhinyana Monastery. Because innovation. But anyway, silence. So you go inside the lotus. And just, whether it's a piezometer or just silence. And inside. Now you can hear the rain. When you were thinking, when I was talking, so much of the world was blocked out. When you're silent, the world becomes alive. It becomes real. You're in life rather than having a commentary about it. It's real. You can feel things. So, when the silence happens, you're right inside the body, inside time, inside silence. Now meditation's really starting to happen. You start to become aware of your breath. It's not a type of meditation you choose. It's just what happens. Reason is because it's the only thing left moving. First year I was here in Perth, only about the first few weeks, this gentleman came. This was in 1983, this gentleman came and said, I've imported this flotation tank, the sensory deprivation chamber, where people can really relax. It's the first one in Australia, he said. And we want to invite you monks to try it out. Now, because in these chambers, it's like totally dark. There's no sound at all. No, sorry, not sound. There's no light at all. and it's soundproof. So people can be shouting or traffic going outside, you can't hear a thing inside. And you're floating in salt water at body temperature. So you've got no pressure on any part of your body at all. No pressure in your butt or in your knees, anyway, just floating there. And it's not cold, it's not hot, it's total body temperature. You can't even feel the water. And there's no smells there. You must make sure you don't eat anything which causes wind for at least a few hours before, because otherwise if you fart, there's no place for that smell to go and you're stuck in there for a long time, and that may be just quite uncomfortable. But I might be telling bad jokes. Because I tell people that if you do have wind, you know, so please, if you do have wind, out of compassion and kindness for everybody else, do not sit in the front. Because if either of you fart, all the people in the back have to smell it. So instead, if you do find your passing wind, please sit at the back like those people over there. So no one else. That's kindness, that's compassion. That's only messing around. So, that's not the reason why when during the sutta class I sit up here. They invited me to sit over there. It's not because I've got wind and if I sit over there I'm a hypocrite and I asphyxiate all the people behind. That's not the reason why I sit here when there's nothing behind me. But in this deprivation chamber, I thought, wow, what a wonderful thing it would be. You get meditation so easy there. But my senior monk at the time, is Ajahn Jagro, he went in there first. I was going to go the next day. I was really excited. Again, flotation chamber. This is really easy meditation. And then that morning, someone brought the newspaper to us. There was a big advertisement in the newspaper. Flotation chambers, first in Australia, as used by Buddhist monks. They conned us. It was a scam. We could get one of the monks to go in there so they could advertise it as used by Buddhist monks. So they said, no, you can't go. I said, well, why? I mean, just the damage has already been done. So you know, it doesn't add or detract from stuff. And no, you couldn't. So I couldn't go in my flotation chamber. So disappointing. But anyway, I asked, what was it like in there? He said, oh, just no aches and pains at all. Just laying down there, beautiful, warm water, no sound except. Is breathing, because that's something you can't stop. That comes from inside. When everything else is quiet, that's where you really hear your breath. It's almost like it's amplified because there's nothing else to distract. And that really made it quite clear why breath meditation is not something you choose, it's just something which happens. The lotus, silence. The only thing which is happening is your breath. So that becomes the next layer of petals in the lotus. You're breathing. Watching your breath. You don't need to breathe through your left nose and your right nostril. It just happens naturally. You just breathe. You don't force the breath. Let's do a long breath. The longest breath ever. Beat my personal best. Oh, I was almost about to be my personal best there and you made me laugh. That sort of stuff is ridiculous. Breathe naturally. Your body knows how to breathe. You just notice it goes in, goes out. That becomes the next layer of petals. And now because that time there's hardly anything distracting you at all, there's no worrying about your body, past and future, totally free of time. And you're just, no thoughts going on, you're just here, just being silent. And then afterwards, you know, you just have this breath going in and out. And people say, aren't you bored? No way. Because another part of meditation happens here, which is very important to understand. when you do very little, especially when you're hardly breathing, because you don't need much, you don't need to metabolize. You're not doing anything. If your car is in the garage, does it need to actually to use much petrol? When your iPhone is on sleep mode, you know, does it actually consume much battery? If you keep using it and downloading this and recording that, of course it uses battery. But if nothing's happening there, it hardly uses any battery at all. So your breath is so soft, so light, because you don't need much air. It's just to keep basic bodily functions going. So your breath becomes very light and calm. Because it becomes light and calm, it starts to become delightful. So you get a nice, peaceful breath. Well, the Buddha called the full awareness of the breath and the calming that breath down. And then you get to what is the fifth and sixth stages of Anapanasati, if you have seen that in the books. The joy and happiness starts to come up. Your breath is delightful. Some of you already, you're meditating, and it's really nice. It's enjoyable, having a really good time. Sometimes, it's just even like this morning, I was enjoying myself before breakfast, so I did an extra 3 minutes. You know, if it wasn't for breakfast, I'd still be sitting here. So, sometimes you're enjoying yourself so much, you don't want to come out of meditation. So joy comes up, and where does that joy come from? And where it comes from is where, because you're not doing very much, hardly anything at all, just watching a breath go in, watching a breath go out, you start to energize big time. You're not wasting energy moving your body. You're not wasting energy planning and crawling over the past. How much energy does that take? Solving problems. You just get exhausted. How much energy does it take thinking? All those are stopped. And just breathing, just so lightly, it hardly takes any energy at all. But you have a continuous supply of energy, but because it's not being wasted, it starts to go into what I call the knower instead of the doer. Not active, but knowing, aware, mindful. Your mindfulness increases in its power and energy. It literally is like someone is turning the lights up in the mind. It's like when you get up in the morning, you can hardly see the way from your room to this hall. In the middle of the day, when the sun is out, it can be so bright, you can see everything. Different intensities of awareness. That is the natural process which happens when you become calm and still. You're just watching your breath go in, breath go out. And your ability to notice that gets more and more intense. You see more of your breath. And what you see becomes delightful. It's like your senses are enhanced. It's like you have your car and no one has cleaned the windscreen for weeks, and then you clean it up and it's clear. Or you've got your glasses and you haven't cleaned your spectacles. So it's all sort of, you know, you think, wow, you know, you are so, got so many stains on you, madam. So it's not you, it's my glasses. Oh, the stains are on here. You're cleaning everything. And so what you see is so clear and sharp and beautiful. This is an important part of the meditation. You go deep in the lotus Those lotus petals will blow your mind how beautiful they are. Never expected to see such things. Yellows, deeper than any yellow you've ever seen. Greens, blues, they're rich. The piece of bamboo flooring in front of you. Wow. So many different shades of yellows and browns. Amazing. You are waking up. So everything you see starts to get very beautiful. Now, little side effects. You know that some people suffer from depression in this world? Where does that depression come from? Because they're mentally exhausted. Physically, they may have some energy, but they've used their brain to worry, to plan, to get angry, to blame others, to blame yourself, thinking day and night. You just wear out your energy. And no wonder you've got hardly energy left. So everything you see, the food, the bright colors, Ajahn Brahm's incredible jokes, everything is, and all it really is just, you know, that you're looking just with hardly any energy, so you're dull. Food, everything is gray. Food is tasteless. Even though it may be the most delicious food, but because your energies are very low. That's depression. You've wasted your energies. But when you meditate like this, your energies start to build up. And wow! Have you seen the clouds outside of this miserable day? It's grey. It's not grey. It's so... Actually, apparently this is supposed to be... I was told off about this last time. This is supposed to be the name of a naughty book. 100 shades of grey up there on the book, on the clouds. And look at them, just so many different shades of, how beautiful it is, just the clouds. So what happens here, you find naturally, because your mind energized, because you're not doing stuff, you're knowing more, you're really here, everything becomes delightful. And that is a wonderful part of the meditation retreat, when that happens. You have a cup of tea, or coffee, whatever, cocoa, whatever. You're sitting out there, just, you know, watching the birds, and you taste the cocoa. Wow! That is so incredible. The taste, you're really there. And it's amazing just how many flavors you can pick up. When I went on Range retreat, couple of weeks retreat, and as soon as I came out, the first meal I had, the breakfast, baked beans. And I just put the first spoon of baked beans, about 3 or 4 beans in my mouth. Wow! I've never tasted baked beans just so deep in their tomato taste and their texture. You know, not too soft, a little bit grainy. And you taste that beans and wow, it was like a taste explosion. And they were just out of a can. They weren't done by some Michelin 5-star chef. If I'd have got a Michelin 5-star chef food, I'd have just been levitating. It was just so amazing. Even something as ordinary as a baked bean, you know, just exploded in its taste and its texture. And it was delicious. It was just a baked bean, that's all. So imagine, this is where your senses become so amazingly sharp and clear and penetrating. You watch the breath and wow, breathing in, whoa. Now for those of you who know of a great monk called Ajahn Gunha, you know, he came here for a while, he's a guy who punched snakes, and that's another story, but this fellow, whenever we used to ask him, can you teach meditation? And he must admit, you know, I'm going to say it was hopeless. It wasn't what I expected, but it was just so profound, but just so clear, but so easy. All he'd ever say was, breathe in, sabha. breathe out, sabha. And that was it. No other talks. I don't think I can get away with that. If on the morning talk, afternoon Sutta talk class, questions and answers, all you ever say is, breathe in, sabha. Breathe out, sabha. Sabai means really nice and easy, delightful. And that was his meditation instruction. And he was just a really great meditator. Keep it simple, because you get to this stage, and when you're breathing in, wow. Sabai means, you know, it's a Thai word, means it's really nice and easy. So it's like breathing in, wow. Breathing out, oh, yeah, oh, I could have more of this, yeah. That was legitimate meditation instructions. Not what you expect, but what works. It happens naturally, but you can encourage it along a bit. Because that's what happens, you breathe again, you're having a wonderful time. And people just say, you're crazy, you're mad. What do they put in the breakfast this morning? Are they put drugs in the breakfast that, you know, you're enjoying yourself? And just, what have you been doing all day? You spent all this money coming all the way to Australia. What did you do? Go see Margaret River? Did you go and see the Sydney Opera House? What did you do? And all this time you spent overseas? Yeah, I watched my breath go in and out. You're mad. But when you get into it, it's wonderful, it's beautiful. Who wants to see the Sydney Opera House? It's only a bridge. If you want to see a bridge, we've got a bridge. We've got a few bridges around. If you want to see Niagara Falls, Niagara Falls. You don't see Niagara Falls. Just get in your shower, turn the shower on, that's a fall. Great Wall of China. We've got a wall just outside of Bodhidharma Monastery. That's pretty great. A long wall. But you find out that you're just enjoying the breath. Oh, it's nice. That's a legitimate stage of meditation. You've gone in to the lotus. And my goodness, it's delightful. And you're only just starting to open it up. It really starts to get incredible. And it's not something you do. If you start to do it and hurry along the process, bang, 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 it all shuts up again. Start all over again. Ugh. Dummy, dummy, dummy. So instead, you just let it happen. You just wait. Delightful breath, breathing in, breathing out. In, out. And then your lotus starts to open up. Really delightful. If it's not delightful, you haven't got enough oomph yet. You've been doing too much. Relax more. Get the energies and mental energies going into the knower, not the doer. Are you happy? And then when you really get happy, enjoying the food, enjoying the silence, sitting out there just watching the trees grow, not worrying about your mobile phones or what's happening in the world, that takes care of itself. Just sit down, you're tired, you take a nice rest. Don't worry about how much you sleep or how little you sleep. There's no one's checking up on you. Your happiness, that's what you're checking up on. Your peace, your quietness, your calm. And after a while, you're calm there and just, oh, the delightful breath. You're watching breath and this beautiful light comes in the mind. The meters. And if you think you're having fun, you ain't seen anything yet, baby. These dimitters come out, wow. Because you're just going into deeper sense of bliss. Deeper into the lotus. More and more profound, more beautiful, more fragrant. Fills us all, the mind up with joy. What the dimitters are is the five senses are stopping or probably stopped. You can't hear anything. You can't see anything. Not sight is turned off. Even your body, you can't feel it. It's gone. Whee! Good riddance. And you've got this beautiful light in the mind. You will all see that light sooner or later. When you're dead. is gold. You've seen, heard this before. You're dead and you go floating towards the light. You heard that before? You may have seen it in sort of some movies or something. Or when some people are crazy, they say this to their grandma who's dying in hospital. Whatever you do, Mum, don't go towards the light. Because that means dying. No. Because what happens here is when you're dead, the five senses stop totally. It's called dead. You go floating towards the light. That is what everybody sees when they die, when they're dead. But many people can see that before you die, and it's totally safe. The five senses get subdued and stopped. Beautiful light appears in the mind. Oh, this is nice. What do you do? It's the same. Just be aware and be kind. That's the most important object because it's here now. What do you do with it? Just be kind to it. Let it be. Don't interfere with it. And that's where is the subtle meditations occur. And that's where, you know, that's one of my specialities, how to deal with those nimittas and lights and how to settle them down and how to really take them into the next layer of petals, into the jhanas. And they really blow your mind. That's why they're scary. They're scary because they're powerful, immense. Biggest thing you've ever experienced. But you can do it if you follow the instructions. And it is totally 100% safe. More than safe. Those are places where incredible healings happen. Those are the sorts of times, nimittas especially, where your brain just, it's got this terrible disease, it refigures itself, where typhus fevers just disappear, where cancers, what's happened? It's gone. Powerful. Amazing. But you can do it a bit beautiful, blissful. And when you come out afterwards, oh, thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Thank you, the Buddha. Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. Beautiful experiences. But not just for the fun of it. Even so, for the fun of it, it's pretty good. But also for the great insights which come afterwards. Naturally. But in the end, all you're really doing is going into your lotus. I'm supposed to be Theravada, but Theravada, Mahayana, Vajrayana, or my, you know what my tradition is? Hahayana, yeah, Hahayana. It doesn't really, really matter. You go inside these lotuses, and you find it's just beautiful, wonderful. And you find just all this Mahayana, Theravada, nonsense, that's just so on the outside. Girls, boys, old, young, Asian. We asked the other day, how many Asians are in Bodhinyana Monastery? How many monks have we got who are Asians? And I said, well, actually, just they're all Asians. Some are South Asians, some are Southeast Asians. Some are Caucasians, some are Australasians. There's all that rubbish about race. You go past your body, go inside, there's just, there is no gender or race or age or anything. You go deeper inside into your mind. That's incredibly beautiful. And you learn so much and have a wonderful time as well. And that's when afterwards, people actually say, well, look, I don't know what you were eating or what they were putting in your food or what's in the water at sort of Jhana Grove, but whatever drug it is, please bring me back some to Jakarta next time or to Hong Kong or wherever you've come from. You bliss out. You can do it. You're a lotus. Open it. But not through willpower. So mindfulness, awareness, be here. And be kind. And that's what happens. The next stage, right inside the one you're in now. Every one of you has got Buddha nature. It's supposed to be Mahayana, isn't it? Is that Theravada monks are supposed to say that? Of course they are. In your lotus. You've got all those jhanas. Right now, you just got to go in and see them, find them. And of course you can't. A lie to yourself. If you're in jhana, wow, that's immense. So that's easy to know who's got jhanas and who hasn't. So, enjoy. So, are you going to aim for jhanas next? Stop it! Stop aiming for stuff. That's in the future. Just be here. No past, no future, no goals, no aims. That just leads to frustrations. Stop doing stuff and getting frustrated. Just be. Stop going anywhere. And the longer you are here, the more peace you make, the deeper the meditation goes. You start to feel yourself waking up, getting higher, more alert, more awake. That is the path to meditation. Da da da. Sadhu. 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 I never asked the question, do teddy bears have Buddha nature? Certainly they don't complain. And this teddy bear, a long time ago, it got beyond thinking. It stays in noble silence. So it's pretty far.